It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Yes! Super fast.
Wow. Just all of a sudden got really slow. All of a sudden the music stopped. John Curley in for Dory. Dory spending some time. I thought it was when people always use the term much-needed vacation or much-needed time off. Like, really? People in radio work that hard that they need much-needed time off? Come on. By the way, I hung out with Nicole over the weekend, who ran over to a man to complain to this complete stranger about the condition of my bed and kept yelling out, "His bed is not comfortable." I'm like, "Yo, Nicole, stop it. Stop it. He's not having a comfortable bed." I'm like, hey, whoa, people think you're sleeping in my bed. Well, I did sleep in your bed. I said, not like that. Not like that.
Not like that.
Not like that. Here's what happened. Auction for Stronger Families, great organization. They do wraparound services for first responders, for police and fire. Great organization. I think they try to raise $600,000 or $700,000. They're raising money for everything from marriage counseling, you know, to scholarships. I mean, anything you can imagine that anybody, any man or woman that serves the public as a police officer, a fireman, EMT, they're there for them. Great, great, great organization.
Military too.
And military as well. So they're all there. They had a big auction at the Hyatt in Bellevue. And I put up an item. They asked for an item. Go to and spend the weekend at John Curley's cabin. And people always think, oh, cabin. They think, oh, it's like something at Suncadia. My wife and I just wanted to buy a cabin. And the cabin's like 4,000 square feet. And it's got like a four-car garage. I don't know, a cabin. This, right, Nicole? You've been here.
Oh, this is a cabin.
This is a cabin. This is where in the winter, there's a little sign out front that says mice vacancy, and all the mice come, and then the mice eat the crotch out of my underwear and the toes out of my socks. This is truly a cabin experience. How much did it sell for at the auction?
$10,000.
$10,000 somebody spent to come up here for Saturday and Sunday. No indoor toilet. No toilet. Outhouse. Come on in, everybody. And that's when Nicole ran...
A trip to San Diego to stay in a hotel and go sailing went for less.
Yes, by the way. And that San Diego hotel had an indoor toilet. I guess this is what people are going for nowadays. So Nicole ran over to the person that bought the thing for 10 grand and said, hey, by the way, his bed's uncomfortable. And it is an outhouse and it is about. And I said, whoa, calm down. You guys already given the money. You don't try to talk him out of it.
No, I just promised him that I would make sure that you get some sort of mattress pad or new mattress because it really is world's worst mattress.
And what a funny thing. This is my fastest 15, but it's so funny. I'm a huge fan of Nicole. I'm a huge fan of Dory's and Brandy Cruz. So Brandy said to Nicole, hey, come to this event because there's going to be lots of very, very attractive men and you should come and you're going to meet a handsome fireman. So I decide to call Nicole out at the very beginning of the auction.
Both of us got called out,
That you're looking for a date. And then also I pointed out, of all the people in the media, the only person that holds anybody's feet to the fire is right over there, ladies and gentlemen, Brandy Cruz. And this room of 300 people, firemen and policemen and military and EMTs, stand up and give Brandy Cruz a standing ovation. And she comes, what did she say to you?
She told me to sit down, number one, because I stood up with everybody and she said, sit down. She was mortified. And I don't think I've ever seen Brandy mortified. It was, fun.
She goes, we're in a room full of real heroes and they're standing up for me. I said, you deserve that, Brandy Cruz.
By the way, everyone there was married. I did not find a husband.
I know. Mm-hmm. The one fireman that got out named Ryan. I was like, well, now that guy's got a twin brother. There's your husband right there.
I know.
That was kooky. Yeah.
And
funny.
I will say.
Yes.
Oh, really quick. Just about your cabin thing. And I don't know if people think that you might be high maintenance. I don't know why they would get that idea. But if that's something somebody thinks, it is very much not the case. You are very, other than your first class, but really first class on an airplane is just so you can get off the plane faster. It's not actually for the...
I don't drink
during the flight.
I don't drink. Nope. Right. I don't drink on it. I don't eat. I just want to be the first one off the plane.
sometimes it's shocking to me how simple you live. So I just wanted to tell people.
Henry David Thoreau, the man that can live with the richest man or the wealthiest, the one that's going to learn to live with the least. And I'm telling you, I am down bare bones. I got one bowl. I got one knife. I'm down to hardly anything. And then I was supposed to go out hunting today. For the first time in my life, I was supposed to hunt for deer. I think tomorrow is the last day. And a friend of mine called up and said, "You want to go deer hunting?" And I was like, "I do." And so morally, I had all these weird feelings about it. I've never killed any. I mean, I've killed a relationship.
Killed a squirrel.
That was an accident. I've killed, you know, but like running over something in a car. I've killed some relationships from clingy women early on as they were budding, but never like pulled the trigger on anything. And this friend of mine is like serious hunter. His house looks like, you know, one of those, all these, his house looks like a taxidermy's house. He's got giant animals everywhere hanging from the walls. And I kept thinking, do I have what it takes to pull the trigger when you look at the thing? And how do I justify this? And he gave me a whole speech about why and where and how, and didn't get a shot off. But it was odd. Like in the morning, this is so dumb. And any hunters out there, I'm like, You're a baby, or a worse word than that. I woke up this morning. I'm driving over there at 5:30 in the morning. I'm thinking the deer is out in the woods, and I am driving to where the deer is. The deer doesn't know that I'm driving over there. The deer doesn't know that I'm putting on my boots. The deer doesn't. The deer is going to come out of the woods, and I'm driving in, and I'm parking and getting the gun and putting the round in, and the deer, like this weird feeling of like I'm the destiny of myself and the deer. Am I getting really deep here? Does you follow me on any of this sort of stuff?
Oh no, I do definitely follow you. I don't think I could do it for that reason. I mean, you gave me the spiel, and this morning I woke up around that time and I was like, oh, I can't believe he's going to go do it, when that's just because this deer comes to the same spot all the time. And like you said, he's not good for the herd or whatever it is.
I don't know.
But he does this. He has this routine, and he has no idea that he's on his way.
I know. I didn't tell you what. I know the kid. This doesn't need to be the news. But listen, I went with Dougie to Ellensburg to pick up some stuff. This is like about a year ago, and the guy. This was actually this time last year during deer hunting season. This guy, the younger guy in there, is like 20-something. Are you John Curley from EV Magazine? He says, yeah. Oh my God, my mom and I used to watch all the time. Are you going hunting with these guys? And I thought, I'll just say yes, right? I said, yep, going out with these guys. And he goes, cool, what are you going for? And I was like, and I knew it was deer hunting season. I said, deer, what are you hunting with? And I went, you know, and I couldn't think of a round. I couldn't think of a round. I went, probably 223. 223? Really? That's, wow. You're going to take a deer? We're going to shoot the deer with a 223. And now I realize, holy moly, that's not a big enough round. So now I have to just backtrack. So now I am drowning in a series of lies that are coming out of me, right? And I said, in the eye. You're going to shoot a deer in the eye? I was like, yep, and it's going to go right through the other eye. And he goes, well, then what do you do? Then what do you do? I said, then I run after it. It's blinded. And then I finish it off with a knife. And he's like, what? Really? And at this point, I'm like, I just got to get out of here. I have to get out of the store. Because it's like, this story makes no sense. And my friend goes, Dougie goes, yeah, why don't you tell him more about how you finish it off with a knife? And the guy's like, yeah, how do you do that? I'm just like, oh my God, oh my God, let me out of here. I have no idea what I'm saying.
That's funny.
And I could never go back into that store again. Because I knew the guy would be like, how did it go hunting with a knife and a 223? It was
yay. Yeah, that's horrible.
Oh yeah. All right.
But I have a friend that has a farm, or a cousin that has a farm over there, and I saw all of his animals recently, right? And I was making friends with all these little pigs and stuff, and it's hard to me. I can't even fathom pulling the trigger on one of them. However, you know, and I asked him how he could, right? And he said, you know, they have a really great life. They have one bad day, and they, you know, that's their purpose. That's their contribution. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I still couldn't pull the trigger.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that makes me feel a little bit better. I don't know. They have on the farm.
Here's how I'm justifying it, because I'm going out tomorrow. I'm going to shoot the thing, and then I'm going to feed my dogs.
Okay.
So I'm going to, the venison that I get, I'm going to feed my dogs. They're going to get really healthy food. And then there you go. And so
circle of life.
Circle of life. This is an older deer, not as popular as some of the other deer. And the herd just wants him out of there. So there you go. He's a 2x3 or whatever. And they also think there's video of him at the January 6th Capitol riot. They think he was in Chuck Schumer's office humping the desk or something like that. So the he's got to go. Yeah. Okay. When did you break on this show? Well, normally we're out by 23. I've got Mike Lynch talking about Halloween candy he hates.
Yeah, do it. Go for that.
Here we go. You ready?
We don't break until 24, 25.
Oh, good. Mike Leach, for some reason, I don't know why this guy, it's amazing that he's like Mr. Magoo, that the crazy stuff he says all the time, and still no one has been able to quite get him fired for anything politically incorrect. It came close when he first got the new gig down there. Was he in Mississippi or something like that? And he sent out some photo of somebody in a rocking chair. But here is your coach telling you what candies he can't stand at Halloween.
We talked about on the broadcast how you hate candy corn. What's your favorite Halloween
candy corn? I mean, I completely hate candy corn. When I was a kid, well, gummy bears. Let's see. Gummy bears for sure.
Sour or regular?
The Haribo. It's got to be the Haribo ones. And then the other thing I like is when...
Well, wait. Is he still talking about he hates or he likes? Then we're back on to what he likes now? This is what he likes?
Yeah, he gets back to what he likes.
Yeah. Okay. They used to have the sprees in a box. Outstanding. You have to go to the dollar store to find it, but I do. And then the latest.
Sprees are great. I haven't thought about sprees in a long time.
Good stuff.
You know, there's still candy innovation, although a while back I found that Europe had better candy than we did overall because they have gummy everything. And then,
it's true.
They have those Nerds clusters, which is new.
Is this an entire show of Mike's candy, Halloween candy? Is this like a segment, a regular segment there? Man, he can go.
Post-game interview.
The gummy. Right.
Yeah, which is good. The Nerds clusters is good. And then if you go chocolate, probably Almond Joy.
Love it. Hopefully you'll get some of that next week.
Yeah, we'll see.
I went to see the James Bond movie last night with my buddy Al, and I look over at him, and he buys Milk Duds and popcorn and I think a Dr. Pepper. I'm like, are you planning on bringing some kids in here? He's like, no,
what?
I have a whole system. I said, what's a system? So I put two Milk Duds in my mouth, and I chew them up, but I don't swallow, but I get them good and soft, and then I take a handful of popcorn, and I throw that in there, and then Then I wash it down with Dr. Pepper. And I turned to Lene, his wife. I'm like, what? Is he kidding? No, that's what he does. And it's quite good. It's very popular. And then I made fun of him to some other buddy that was standing there who was just happening leaving another movie. And they knew one another because it's Clea Element and we're in Ellensburg. Everybody knows one another. And I start to make fun of Al. I go, hey, check out Al with the Milk Duds and the corn and he chews too. And this guy, total stranger, goes, yeah. You've never done that before? It's the best. And then with that, there was this cluster of people around that put two Milk Duds in their mouth, a handful of popcorn, and wash it down with Dr. Pepper. It's a whole, like, society, I guess. I'd never heard of this before. That's just something that you do, and apparently it's lost on me. So I saw
all of those things individually, great. Together,
doesn't work
mouth.
For you? Don't knock it till you try it, especially you got to put the Dr. Pepper in there to make it all work. There's a great story out of CBS. This is in Louisiana. There was a school. There were like fights almost every single day. Kids pounding on one another, bullies beating kids up in the hallway. And then finally they said, you know what? Let's do this. Let's bring some dads in.
Plagued with violence.
Over the course of 3 days,
another fight.
23 students arrested for fighting.
Massive police response.
But strangely, there hasn't been another incident since. Perhaps in part because of this most unusual crisis intervention team.
Nobody here has a degree in school counseling.
No majors in criminal justice.
No.
Your qualifications are?
We're dads. We decided the best people who can take care of our kids are who?
Bilal Lafitte started Dads on Duty.
We're out doing what we do for our babies.
A group of about 40 Southwood dads who now hang out at the school in shifts.
Let's go.
Today, any negative energy that enters the building has to run a gauntlet of good parenting.
What's going on, buddy?
You moving fast. I like that hustle.
I immediately felt a form of safety.
We stopped fighting. People started going to class.
How could that be?
You ever heard of a look?
A look? Dads have the power to do that?
Yes. Not many people know it, but yes.
Let's go, let's go.
But it's not just the firm stares and stern warnings.
Let's make it to class, my son.
It's also the dad jokes.
They just make funny jokes like, oh, hey, your suit's untied, but it's really not untied.
And they hate it.
Perfect mix of tough love and gentle ribbing they do so well that has helped transform this school.
The school has really just been, like, happy, and you can feel it.
Which is why the dads plan to keep coming to Southwood indefinitely.
Because not everybody has
the father figure
at home.
Or a male, period, in their life.
So just to be here makes a big difference.
Do you think you stumbled onto something here?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Have a good morning.
They'd like to start chapters of Dads on Duty throughout Louisiana.
What's up, baby boy?
And hope to eventually take on the country.
All right.
Without a fight.
Good story. So simple, so easy, right? I mean, just somebody there to call them out, let them know they care. Well done.
Specifically a dad.
Oh, yeah. The power of an adult. Respected and calling him out. Great piece there. Good job from Steve Hartman. Plus a really interesting story I saw over the weekend. I think it was on, it might have been Wall Street Journal. It was a coach, college kids are like 7 to 10 years old. They play football, and this young coach, this kid died. He got shot in a crossfire of some gang stuff. And every Saturday, the coach goes to the kid's grave and takes other kids to the grave to, you know, just stand there and say a few words to this young man who's passed at the age of 12. And then they go and they play a game on Saturday. They've got, like, his name on their jerseys. And it's just, it's so amazing. You think about the trauma and the heartbreak of a 12-year-old and 10-year-olds that have to deal with burying a fellow player, and then they're still playing, but the value of that coach's responsibility to those kids and how they look up to them. And this coach is like, you kidding? You know, 10 years from now, I still have kids coming up to me and talking about how important it was that I was there, and kids calling him up, and he feels like he stops kids from fighting and stops tempers from flaring. And he says, I'm there in the middle stopping two 12-year-olds that might eventually shoot at one another when they turn 14. And it's a world and a trauma and a drama that none of us could possibly understand. But good for them, and good for the guys coming in there in Louisiana to be stepping up. And Dads on Duty. All right, Dory Monson Show. Fastest 15 slowed down considerably by my hunting story. We'll be right back. All right, here we go. The Dory Monson Show. John Curley filling in for Dory. People that are texting me, they like the idea of hunting and then finishing them off with a knife. So just listen to Dory Monson's podcast to get some more hunting advice from me. It seems like the constant battle or hunting goes on between Rand Paul and Dr. Fauci. And you kind of wonder who's going to win on this one. Who's the villain? Who's the hero? The black hat, white hat, the kind of cartoon characters that we place everybody in. This seems to be going on every couple of weeks. You're going to get something from Rand Paul calling out Fauci, and then you get Fauci coming back at Rand Paul. It would seem like if you were sort of an umpire calling balls and strikes on this, it would seem like Fauci is about to go out swinging, or at least standing there watching the pitch come in, because as more information comes out, a letter has just come out from NIH, this is of last week, basically saying, yes, there was research being done at that lab in China that could be considered gain-of-function research, in which they're taking a coronavirus or a bat virus, linking it to the spine of a human DNA, and then in putting that into a mouse to see what would happen. Would it become more deadly? You're basically taking something that doesn't really affect humans, which is the bat virus, and then seeing if you can make it sort of accelerating, having it jump from a bat into a human. Is it possible? And apparently they didn't mean to, but it did. So this letter is released basically explaining that here we are in Wuhan, China. They were doing this type of research. Yes, it was coming from NIH, but you're going to get Fauci and you're going to be able to get a Rand Paul going back and forth and get into semantics or the science of it, which then causes enough of a smokescreen that most people end up sort of having their eyes glaze over. But Rand Paul was asked specifically again, should Fauci, by the way, the highest paid individual in the federal government, making more than $400,000+ a year. Here comes Rand Paul.
It's ultimately about the safety of the country and the world. You know, if 5 million people died from a virus that came out of a lab, wouldn't we want to know? Wouldn't we want to try to prevent this from happening again? You know, they've experimented with other viruses that are much more deadly. This virus has been very deadly, but it's got a 1% mortality. What if you had a virus that had a 15%? And here's what they say. They still to this day are trying to get around the truth. They say, well, it was unexpected that it gained function. Well, how do you know if it's unexpected or not? It's unknown. If you take a virus from a cave, you combine it with a virus that has a 50% mortality, it either is going to be more transmissible or less, but you don't know in advance whether it's going to be worse or better. So when it gains function, that is something that actually is expected. Some of these viruses are going to gain function, and then the possibility of leaking out, I think, is a horrific thing for mankind. But realize that Dr. Fauci's been steadfast in this. He said early on, even back to 2012, that should a scientist catch one of these diseases and spread it as a pandemic, that the collective accumulation of science would be worth the deaths of the people who die. And that's the question right. People need to ask him, but nobody on the left will ask him, was it worth 5 million people dying?
Okay, so I wasn't able to find that cut, but I can tell you this. So NIH, the National Institute of Health, gets the money from you, the people of the United States, and then it sends it out to researchers. You want to stay in good favor with the NIH in order to get your money so that you can do your research. So everybody on board. And when last year EcoHealth Alliance and NIH, or at least EcoHealth Alliance, which gets all of its money from NIH, decided they get a whole bunch of doctors together to spend a whole bunch of money and to write a letter, and they brought these great big ads in the New York Times and the LA Times, Chicago Tribune, basically saying this is nuts to think this virus came from the lab. This is crazy. And then even the guy from EcoHealth Alliance, a friend of Fauci, had Lancet and a bunch of doctors, Lancet being a medical publication, signed a big thing. That's not coming from a lab. It's not. There's three labs in the world where they do this type of research. What are the chances that it could have possibly come out of that lab in China? So anybody that says it came out of a lab in China, one, you're a racist, or you're a conspiracy theory, or you're a Trumper. So you had Lancet and these doctors. You had a giant advertisement done in newspapers basically saying, look over here. Don't look over here. That's not happening over here. So the question becomes, why are they covering things up? And remember back in May, at the end of May, Joe Biden said, we're going to send researchers and find out exactly what happened. Well, 90 days later, they released it. Guess what they found out? A page and a half is the total amount that was released by the White House. And it comes down to, we still can't tell. Really? You still can't tell? You know exactly where it came from. The chances of it coming from some other place, the fact that this virus is in a bat and you don't see any other animals that were infected until it got to be a human being, there's no one. There's no information. There's no science of it at all. You know it did. And the question becomes, why is the United States, NIH, and Fauci, I believe, covering this up? And this causes more and more distrust with the institution. Why are we not told that it came from China? Is it because we're afraid to say, hey, it came from China, therefore we spent $5 million on funding that was given to them and they shouldn't have been doing gain-of-function research because we knew in 2014 that this lab wasn't secure enough, and so therefore somehow we're tied in and we're liable as well, that the United... Is that the problem? I mean, this seems like a script from a James Bond movie? Is it the problem that maybe some U.S. tax dollars are somehow connected to the Wuhan lab? Come on, you know exactly where it came from. And only until you come out with this and explain that this is where it came from and this is the part of it, you have distrust. And as long as you have distrust, you'll have people take that distrust and follow it all the way down the line to saying, no, I don't want to get a vaccine. No, I don't want to wear a mask. No, I don't believe this whole thing's happening. And I believe Fauci, for some reason, is covering this stuff, and the media still always gives him a pass because they love him.
Neither I nor Dr. Francis Collins, the director of the NIH, lied or misled about what we've done. The framework under which we have guidance about the conduct of research that we fund, the funding at the Wuhan Institute was to be a bat viruses in China. And the research was very strictly under what we call a framework of oversight of the type of research. And under those conditions, which we've explained very, very clearly, does not constitute research of gain of function of concern. There are people who interpret it that way, but when you look at the framework under which the guidance is, that is not the case. So I have to respectfully disagree with Senator Paul. He is not correct that we lied or misled the Congress. It's just not correct.
Okay, is it possible, Dr. Fauci, that China lied to you? Is it possible they took EcoHealth Alliance, took the money, $5 million, and gave it to the lab in China, which you have already determined does not necessarily keep the highest standards, and that also in November of 2019, a number of researchers there at the lab were mysteriously sickened by something that appeared to be like pneumonia? Is it possible that they finally released what they did in a 2021 paper just a couple of months ago? Could China have lied to you? Is it possible? If they lied to you, could they be lying now? They lied to the World Health Organization. Why are you covering for them when you want to find out? When you want to know, as opposed to just continuing to go after Rand Paul? Why is it that they just don't want anybody to know what happened in that lab in China? Again, until you come forward. By the way, you want to see somebody that's really doing great research on this one and great stories? Look at Vanity Fair. Normally, it's a left-wing organization. They really have great writers at Vanity Fair, but they've decided this is a dog and a bone. They're not giving up on what was happening in that lab in Wuhan, China. I hope Dr. Fauci gets a chance to enjoy some early retirement and maybe some prison time. Let's see. Quick break. Come right back. The Dory Monson Show. Thanks for tuning in. Right back. All right, it starts today in King County. Everybody, Dory Monson Show, John Curley filling in for Dory. By the way, this is going to be it for us. And then 2 o'clock, right? Then we start to talk Seahawks, Monday Night Football, Saints come to town, and we go with the pregame, which I feel sorry for those guys. Dory used to do that show. It would seem like, you know, the game would be on at 1 o'clock. It would seem like Dory was on at 8 in the morning talking, like for 5 or 6, 7 straight hours, then the game, and then they would go afterwards, then they would keep talking. It would be like 12 hours of Seahawk talk. But listen, if you're passionate about football, Cairo Radio is the place to be. That starts at 2 o'clock right here. Pregame, Monday Night Football. By the way, if you've ever been to a Monday Night Football game, it is, there's a special sort of electricity in the air. It really is. People are super pumped up, and there's tons and tons of cameras, and it is a wild time. So hopefully we get ourselves a victory here at home. There's a victory coming your way if you're King County and you think you've been forcing something that people are actually going to participate in. You know, they say that as you go into a restaurant now, you're going to have to show your vaccination card. We don't know specifically. Do we know yet, Nicole? Do we have to show our ID, or just can you flash something on your phone? Do we know specifically what they're looking for?
Well, I know they want you to download that the code and like download your card into the system so that you can get that code to show them. So I don't think that they ID you, but you know, I don't know. Every place, I guess, interprets the rules their own way. So
our buddy Jack, who's Jack's Barbecue, he was selling Cairo 7. He said they are prepared.
We've put up signage for sure, and we've told the staff the first week is you iron out your process. So we're asking them to have the conversation with the customers. Tell them this is the law.
Most, I would assume, most people in Seattle will go along with it. They're going to show the little vaccine thing.
We had somebody throw a menu at one of the waiters once because we asked them to put their mask back on when they were walking across the restaurant. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be hard on business. We're just trying to find a way to do it.
By the way, it is the stupidest kabuki theater in the world. It is, if you were from another planet and you're watching, and let's say you're a superior intelligence from another planet, which wouldn't be hard right now to find a superior intelligence as to what's happening here on Earth, and you say, oh, I see. So you come in the door with your mask on and you talk to the hostess lady, and then she walks you, but you're walking by everybody who's sitting down eating, potato skins, let's say. And then you, because they don't have potato skins on this other planet. And then you, with bacon, although they do have bacon. They do have bacon because they are an intelligence force. And then you see the people, you're walking by them, they're drinking and talking and laughing and stuff's flying out of their mouth. But then you got your mask on. But then once you sit, then the other intelligence from this other planet goes, oh, I see. The virus must hover at 5 feet, 3 inches. So once you're below it, like a cloud of germs, you're safe. And now you can order your own potato skins or jalapeno poppers or whatever else and enjoy it. But then when you get up to go to the bathroom, whatever, and you got to put your mask back on as you walk into the men's room. I mean, this whole thing is just stupid. It is stupid.
It's very stupid. I think it's all designed to remind us that we're in a pandemic so that
yes.
we can keep the
control,
power.
Everybody. Don't right? forget, put your mask on.
I think it's necessary. And
I think this lady is named Karen.
I'm okay with it. I have a mother who's high risk. And so, you know, it makes me feel a little safer about going out, knowing that I'm doing what I can to protect her.
Okay.
I struggle with it because I want to support the businesses that don't have a choice, obviously. And also, you know, I have a cousin who told me she's not going to do anything in King County because, you know, she's not going to give them their money if they're going to do this to us and whatever. And I said, I agree with all of that, except I also don't want, you know, Dow or Jenny or Inslee to tell me I can't have a life anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I'm willing to still do these things and find other ways to fight it because I got to have a life. I struggle with it, though.
I know you want to sort of take a principled stand, but at the same time, and you do want to support these businesses. I'll tell you this. This is my prediction. And I'll tell you this quick story. My dad used to have a car wash. 1974 had a car wash, and the federal government came in because we had an oil embargo. And we weren't able to get oil, so if you really want to destroy the supply of something, have the government ration it. Whenever the government rations anything, you will not get a supply. So they decided to ration. In Pennsylvania, if your license plate ended in an odd number or an even number, odd numbers on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, even numbers Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, so blah, blah, blah. And if you owned a gas station, they said you were allowed to get one fill-up. And I think the thing drops like 7,000 gallons. Or 70,000 gallons into the tank, one fill up, and as soon as you're out of gas, you have to wait until the beginning of the new month. Okay. Well, on Lancaster Avenue, starting all the way from Wayne, where his gas station was, all the way down Lancaster Avenue, which is the main strip there on the main line, there's hundreds of gas stations. Well, my dad, who was with IBM since 1963, realizes they don't have a system in place to check. So his guy says, hey, Jack, want to let you know we're out of gas. And my father says, fill up the tank again. And my father filled that tank four times a month. They never did anything. And as he said to me, I told you, they've got no system to check. Keep pumping the gas. We're going to keep making the money. I believe they don't have a system in place to truly check. Go in and find out if that's true or not. Show them some bull crap on your phone. Walk in and enjoy those jalapeno poppers.